Thanks, John. I should have explained that that's 10 SAW, not 10 SAS, but common mistake. As was mentioned, this is part of my master's research under Joe Clark, and the title of my project is Abundance of the Louisiana Black Bear in the 10 SAW River Basin, Louisiana. The Louisiana black bear, Ursus americanus luteolus, is a subspecies of the American black bear. Historically, it was found in East Texas, throughout Louisiana, and into southern Mississippi. Over the course of the last century or so, however, the number, both the distribution and the number of Louisiana black bear plummeted, partially due to extensive habitat loss and fragmentation in the Mississippi River alluvial plain. It's been estimated that what once was about 10 million hectares of bottomland hardwoods has been reduced to 2.8 hectares today. This is a satellite shot from about 500 kilometers up of what's referred to as the Arklamis. It's the area where the state of Arkansas, Louisiana, and Mississippi come together along the Mississippi River. What I want to highlight today is this swath of light-colored area, and this is the Mississippi River alluvial valley, and it was once predominantly hardwood forest, and this light coloration indicates that today it's predominantly cleared agricultural field with a couple of small patches of bottomland hardwood, which the White River National Wildlife Refuge in Arkansas, the 10 SAW National Wildlife Refuge in Louisiana, and another patch, which is the upper Chafalaya River Basin in further south in Louisiana. In addition to this habitat loss, there historically was over-harvest for both commercial and sustenance uses, and there's always been a desire to either reduce or eliminate conflicts between bears and humans, things like crop predation and livestock predation. In 1992, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service listed the Louisiana black bear as threatened and gave it protection under the Endangered Species Act. At that time, the Louisiana Black Bear Recovery Plan was written, which in part stipulates that at the time stipulated that the existing populations of the Louisiana black bear needed to be assessed and monitored. Several studies were done at that time with various goals, a couple of those being population estimation. However, most of those studies were somewhat limited in their scope and used methods that since that time have been improved quite a bit. And almost 10 years down the road, the estimates they did come up with are outdated. There's some anecdotal evidence at this time that at least some of the populations of Louisiana black bear have increased and are increasing in both size and density. And that brings me to my project, which is to estimate the abundance of the Louisiana black bear in the one population, which is the population in the 10 SAW River Basin. The study area is about 41,000 hectares of bottomland hardwood forest in northeast Louisiana. It's in three parishes in the northeast corner, basically just across the river from Vicksburg, Mississippi. Of this complex of hardwood forest, most of that is the 10 SAW River National Wildlife Refuge. There are two state wildlife management areas, Big Lake and Buckhorn, and there's also four tracts of privately owned land that are managed for timber harvest and for hunting opportunities. In spite of their small size and being disconnected from this main portion of the habitat, they hold a surprising number of bears. The methods that I'm going to use are basic mark recapture methods, but instead of using live capture, I'll be using DNA capture And instead of the old process of ear tagging and tattooing a bear, pit tagging, that sort of thing, I'll be using genetics to tag animals. Quite simply put, this mark recapture method is a process of sampling a population, trapping, in this case I'm collecting hair samples for the DNA, in essence tagging individuals, and then in the future sampling the population again and getting a ratio of tagged versus untagged animals. You can continue to do this, and not only getting that ratio, but also begin through capture histories, you begin to develop probability of an individual animal being caught. All of this will be used later in developing an estimate of the population. One of the things of concern is our capture effort. We want to try to sample evenly across the area and give all bears a chance, an equal chance, roughly equal, to be sampled. In order to facilitate this, I placed a grid using GIS. I placed a grid over the study area. I used a cell size of 2.59 kilometers squared, which is roughly a square mile. The reason I did this is because we wanted to offer the average female bear four traps within her home range. And in doing so, males with larger home ranges would have plenty of traps available. So that's why I picked that cell size. The cells were centered on the habitat, and this was a little bit like packing a grand piano on a swayback mule. This study area is pretty fragmented and irregular, so I had to make a lot of judgment calls along these edges on whether to ignore cells that had very little bear habitat or no bear habitat, or if there was a small amount of habitat that was outside this grid, I had to determine whether to add in a site or if the sites near it would be adequate. I then added in a trail layer and went and looked at each cell and tried to shoot for the center of the cell, but also access was a big concern. I knew I was going to have a lot of sites and they had to be checked on a weekly basis, and so the speed of access was important. So I tried to get a balance between this distribution and access and didn't put any sites that were hard to get to, relatively speaking. Once I did that, I loaded those locations into handheld GPS units, and myself and technicians headed out. We navigated to these sites and installed a hair collection site, which is simply a strand of barbed wire, single strand, about 40 to 50 centimeters off the ground, and it's wrapped around three or four trees with about 2.5 meters per side. Sites were flagged for safety, and a line was put up from which we will suspend bait later. Brush was cleared to make sure that the wire was fully exposed at all times, and the wire was kept tight. For this, I used cable ties, heavy-duty cable ties, so each week as the site was visited, if the wire was loose, a quick pull would tighten it again. Once all the sites were established, we went through in a systematic order and baited the sites. We used about 100 grams, basically stale donuts, that sort of thing, in a small biodegradable bag. And then we also used a rag soaked in some sort of sweet scent, honey. These sites were then checked once a week. It was important that we did this because in the environment in Louisiana, it's very hot and humid. And now those are two of the enemies of these samples, degradation. So we wanted to check them frequently enough that we weren't leaving samples out exposed for too long. When a site was checked, we'd look for evidence of a bear having been there. If there was hair on the wire, we looked at each barb separately, and if a barb had five, that was considered a sample. It was collected independently of all the other hair on the wire. And then between barbs, the tools we used were burned, basically sterilized with a torch. When all the samples were removed, we burned the entire wire at that site, rebaited the site, and moved on. Once we got past the first through of 2006, which I should mention, I've sampled in 2006, 2007, and 2008. Once we got past the first 3 weeks when the sites were still somewhat novel, we started to obtain about 125 samples a week. To run a sample from the field to the point where we actually can use it to identify a bear costs around $40. And some quick math, you end up with about $150,000. It's a coincidence, but this happens to be my signing project. In order to cut down cost, and because it's not uncommon to have multiple samples at one site, and while they could be from different bears, the likelihood is that they're often from the same bear. So sampling every sample or analyzing every sample would be not only expensive but potentially very redundant. So we opted to randomly select 25 sites from the sites that produce samples in any given sample period. And then from those samples or sites selected, we picked one adequate sample and we'll analyze that. Once a site or a sample was picked, we begin to process it. And the part of the hair we're actually interested in is the root or the follicle. And so the follicles are clipped, at least 5 to 10 follicles, into a centrifuge tube. And then that's sent to the lab. In the lab, the DNA is extracted from the follicles, and then the DNA is actually amplified using PCR, polymerase chain reaction, which the DNA we're interested in is broken down and rebuilt repeatedly until you get millions of copies of DNA, and then that is stored for future use. To analyze this, we're interested in genotyping. To get an identification of the animal that gave us the sample as well as the sex. To do that, we'll be looking at microsatellite or genetic markers for specific locus or a specific locus in the DNA. And we look at the length of that locus in base pairs. In this example, which this is the result of genotype in the output, in this particular example, in sample one, there are 7 possible allele combination or alleles in this population, represented by these gray bars. This larger peak, you can ignore the lower peaks, but the larger peak indicates that that sample has an allele 164 base pairs in length. And because there's only one big peak there, we know that that's homozygous. There's 2 alleles that are the same showing up for that locus. Sample 2 has also 2 alleles, but it's got one that's 164 base pairs in length and one that's 169 base pairs in length. It's clear to see that these two are different. However, you still at this point can't tell the difference between 1, 4, and 5 and the difference between 2 and 3. And therefore, we would have to go on and look at the next one, which is another locus. And back in the studies in the late 90s when this was done, there were initially 8 markers used. That wasn't quite adequate and they bumped. And I'll probably be doing something similar. There may even be more markers weren't available then in the case that I'm having trouble differentiating between individuals. Once I have this information, I've tagged it. I'll be using tag data and population as well as an estimate of the bias in detection and capture. I'll be doing this partially with closed models, which of course assume closure. Summer sampling periods are short windows. It doesn't cross over the birthing period of bears, which is February. And because I'm sampling all of the available habitat, that population is closed. I'll also be using open models. And the open models have advantages and disadvantages compared to the closed model. One is that no closure is required. Animals can immigrate population. One of the costs of this, though, is you end up with a less precise abundance estimate. One of the real advantages is, though, you end up with a robust survival. If you just use the closed population models, you can do that for several. You're going to get a point estimate of the population for that year. But if you look across years, if your confidence intervals for those point estimates you can tell the size of the population, but you have no idea if the population is increasing. There could be things hidden in there that you're not observing. So this is the advantage of using open models as well. I know you're asking yourself, Mike, and that's a good idea. There's a robust, actually combined features of both the open and the closed population models. In this example, I'm using a closed model in the top row, and these numbers represent capture events for individuals. Zero means that an animal wasn't captured. Period. One means it was. And so using that data, I can get a point estimate for 2006. Same for 2007, 2000. I can then pool this data and say in 2006, this animal was captured. Period. The next year, it was not. Now, be for a number of reasons, died, moved out of the study area, or it. But then in 2008, it may show up again. And from this, we can determine survival. I'll be doing all this program MARC, and I'll be building these models and then using the models to test for heterogeneity in the detection for things such as location, where an animal area, sex, obviously, now, or time, from week to week, within a summer, or it can be across years. Was there some significant in 2000 than they were in 2000? Example. I'd like to thank quite a few people, actually, especially the funding sources, which is the Louisiana Department of Wildlife, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the Black Bear Committee, as well as the staff of both LBW and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service at Tensaw, John Madden and Tom Bartholomew, a couple of supporters of the project, quite hospitable. Their hunting camp and have given us many a good steak dinner. And then Anderson Tully to the Delta tracks, which is important, as well as the Scott family and various other give us access to their land.
Yeah. grand example from the next book. Why didn't you just start out with fewer traps?
Fewer traps would mean holes in my sampling regime, and that could mean missed animals.
Oh, that's right.
And I haven't completely done away with the samples that weren't selected in that first random selection. I'm just initially starting with 25. If that proves to be inadequate and funding available, we'll dig further into that pile until we start, I don't want to say getting the results we want, like we've got some predetermined notion, but if it improves, if the estimates can be improved by more sampling, then we'll just dig into that pile further. But money being what it is, we're initially going with 25. And that number has been used in several other studies similar to this one. That's why we chose 25. Any other questions?
You know, you have this nice grid and a nice distribution throughout your whole study area. Why not have certain, select certain cells that you are selecting here samples from to get a good distribution across your study area instead of the random selection process? You're going to have a good distribution.
Some kind of bias, I'm sure. I don't know.
Let's give Mike a round of applause.